Am I supposed to comfort them and make sure that they are insulated away from this? Like, is that what the point of this is?
You may remember the story of the teaching assistant at Wilfrid Laurier University who was reprimanded in a meeting with several faculty members. Lindsay Shepherd was teaching a communications class about the use of gender-neutral pronouns. As part of her class that day, she showed a video of a debate on the issue, including a professor who does not believe that they is a proper substitute for him or her. Afterwards, her supervising professor and others called her to a meeting based on what they said were complaints from other students. But it turns out there were no complaints. After an independent investigation, Laurier's president, Deborah McClatchy, issued a statement last night saying there were numerous errors in judgment in that meeting and before. Here's what McClatchy said in part. In fact, the meeting should never have happened at all. No formal complaint nor informal concern relative to a Laurier policy was registered about the screening of the video. This was confirmed in the fact-finding report.
The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs,
we still, to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books Podcast.
This episode of the Zero Books Podcast is a conversation with Lindsay Shepherd. Shepherd hit the zeitgeist recently when she was reprimanded for showing her class an excerpt from a debate on gender pronouns that originally aired on the television program The Agenda. The program featured Professor Jordan Peterson, who was scheduled to be a guest on this podcast next month. And Shepherd was told that by showing the clip from the program, she'd committed an act of violence against transgendered students, either in her class or on campus. Lindsay Shepherd and I discussed the importance of free speech, the anti-social justice warrior industry, and campus culture, among other topics. It's Wednesday, December 27th, 2017. I'm Douglas Lane, the publisher of Zero Books and the host of this podcast, and I'm recording this introduction at the breakfast table during a holiday trip to Paris with my family. My apologies for the audio quality. I want to remind you that we've moved the Inside Zero Books podcast from the Zero Books blog to Patreon. This will make it easier to get the members-only podcast on podcatchers. It also means that we'll be repeating the first year of Inside Zero Books on our Patreon account. If you've missed Inside Zero Books the first time during the first year, or if you just want to hear the old episodes again, they will be available. They're going up sporadically. If you haven't already, you might pick up Anselm Japs or Japes or Japes. I keep forgetting how to pronounce his last name. The Writing on the Wall, or Stuart Walton's Neglected or Misunderstood, introducing Theodore Adorno. Also, reading Angela Nagel's Kill All Normies would be a great way to bring in the new year. There is no music for this introduction, so you're not listening to any music, but in just a moment, you'll be listening to Lindsay Shepherd and I discuss free speech on campus.
Lindsay Shepherd is a graduate student at Wilfrid Laurier University, and she is the center of a controversy about free speech and, I guess, transgender rights. Earlier this year, she had showed an excerpt of a debate about gender pronouns to her students, a debate between the anti-social justice warrior and Jungian psychotherapist Jordan Peterson and gender studies professors and journalists. This led to an official reprimand from her advisor and a diversity officer on campus. They claimed that she'd violated the rights of trans students by showing the clip and made people, or at least one person, uncomfortable. Lindsay recorded the conversation with her advisor on her laptop, released it to the media, and the rest is history. Lindsay Shepherd, welcome to the Zero Books Podcast.
Thank you.
One of the questions I sent you in advance, I want to start with, it's kind of down on the list, but how many left-wing or liberal podcasts or television programs or journalists or papers have contacted you about your story?
I have been on the CBC 3 times, actually. That's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And it's known for having a left-wing bias. Though as a public broadcaster, they, of course, would probably not admit to having a bias. So it might actually just be yourself, just Zero Books at this point.
Well, I'm out on a limb. Why don't you tell me, rather than starting with my questions, can you tell me about the recent statement that was released and where things sit with your story at this point?
The third-party neutral investigation is complete, and the full report is just going to be confidential. It's for the president's eyes only, the president of the university. But she did release a statement where she gave some details from the report that she thought, I guess, people might want to know. And for that, I give her a lot of credit because she didn't have to do that. It was, you know, a little hint of transparency through all this, because overall they haven't been transparent at all. The response is like, oh, like Lindsay is vindicated and it's a victory and free speech won this time. But I wouldn't be so quick to say that. And, you know, she does admit, like, I did nothing wrong. And showing the video clip I showed in class was totally reasonable. But at the same time, later in that statement, she says they're going to enhance TA training. So, I mean, if you're saying I did nothing wrong, then why in the same statement are you saying that TA training needs to be better?
Yeah, you'd think that the advisors need more training on free speech.
Yes.
What's appropriate in the classroom. If you did nothing wrong and were reprimanded for no reason, then TAs don't need training. It's everyone else, maybe. I mean, or at least in your case.
Yeah, yeah. So there was definitely some contradictions there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little skeptical, but overall, she did clear some things up. Like, one thing is, it stated that there's no reason to believe that I didn't handle the class discussion well when we were talking about the video clip. And that made me really happy that she included that, because a lot of my detractors, and, you know, as a side note, a lot of my detractors are PhD students and professors.
Hmm.
One thing I've been kind of consistently attacked for is bad teaching. I don't know how to lead discussion. I have bad pedagogy. My students were consulted in this investigation. So to know that to make it clear that I handled the discussion well is important.
Yeah, I would think so. If it was me, that would be something that I would take very personally. My colleagues would say that about me.
Right, especially because I really like being a TA, actually.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning on becoming a professor if you can?
I'm undecided about that. I have a lot of people, other professors, urging me to stay in academia. But I would still have to see, you know, where campus culture is going. So,
yeah.
Too
the one thing that you didn't mention that I want to ask about, that I think I heard a rumor about, was that there was no initial complaint?
Yeah, so this is my understanding of what happened from news articles I've read where the president speaks about it. So it seems that there was a discussion among students from my tutorial outside of the classroom. So they were just talking about what happened. No one knows like what they were talking about. Maybe some of the students were saying they enjoyed the tutorial and others were saying, oh, well, us not so much. Right. So we don't know if they were fully complaining about it and saying it was so horrible and terrible. And then it seems like a staff member from the on-campus LGBTQ collective, which is called the Rainbow Center, they heard that discussion either directly or indirectly and took it upon themselves without being asked to complain to Professor Rambukana, who's the course professor for the class that I TA for.
Did anyone, do you think, actually watch the clip that you showed before approaching you or setting up a meeting or reprimanding you?
The three in the meeting?
Yeah.
I don't think so, because I had written the The thing is, I showed two short excerpts from a 1 hour video.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, they wouldn't have known really what exact times of the excerpts I chose.
Did they watch the whole video?
Perhaps, yeah. What information was given to them? And again, they even released a new statement today, a clarification from the university administration saying that everyone's saying this is a fabricated complaint, but to be clear, there was still someone, it was still based on a discussion from one or more students.
Right. But the students didn't complain. It was a member of this LGBTQ club, the Rainbow Coalition.
Yeah, and it seems like they complained under the pretense of the gendered violence sexual assault policy. And the statement included a paragraph that said the policy was applied in a misinterpreted way. And there was no basis to invoke that policy, and we need to look over that policy.
Well, it's certainly a big mistake on their part. Now, you've said in several interviews that before this happened, you considered yourself to be a part of the left, and that when you showed the clip from the agenda to your class, that you were doing it in the spirit of open debate, that you weren't, that you liked Jordan Peterson at times, you don't like him at other times, you're not a student of his, you never had met him before, and you disagree with him on quite a lot, probably, as someone who's on the left. When I invited you onto the podcast, you told me that you'd be glad to come on the show because you were aware of our imprint. You'd read Mark Fisher's Capitalist Realism, which I was very glad to hear. So how do you define the left, and how has this experience changed your politics, if at all?
So my understanding of the left is that it's either socialist or has socialist tendencies. So more social support systems like welfare. Or in Vancouver, where I'm currently visiting my family, there's a place called Insight, which is a safe drug injection site where drug users can get access to clean needles to lower their risk of HIV, AIDS, etc. And if they overdose, they're surrounded by nurses. So more social support systems. And also, I understand the left to be more protective of environmental rights, more concerned about climate change, even though the environmental conservation movement was originally a right-wing movement. Also, the bigger picture here would be capitalism as a whole, because capitalism requires perpetual economic growth, which means environmental degradation and devastation. But that being said, in Capitalist Realism, the book you mentioned that I've read, like even liberals and leftists can be just as capitalist as right-wingers. So I wouldn't say being a proponent of capitalism is exclusive to the right. In terms of my politics changing, I wouldn't say I've changed much. It's very odd to me when people say, oh, look, Lindsay, the self-proclaimed leftist is... Oh, can you hear my dog barking?
It adds an ambiance of realism to the whole affair, so no worries.
Yeah, so they say, like, Lindsay, the self-proclaimed leftist is now an alt-right hero, and she sold out. Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to deal with my dog.
Well, this is something I want to talk to you about. Since you're reprimanded, you have been on a variety of programs that I consider to be, I don't know if they're all far right, some of them are. They're just all part of what I call the anti-social justice warrior industry. You were on Dave Rubin's show and Gadsad's show and Louder with Crowder and The Rebel, and I may be missing a couple. And all of those programs definitely have a right-wing bent, and they're of a piece, I think, and I think of them as kind of programs that make their whole existence relies on people like your advisor to give them content. If it weren't for people making those kinds of mistakes every day and kind of the way the left is constantly fucking up, the Dave Rubin and Gadsad and Louder with Crowder wouldn't exist. I do think they opportunistically kind of got you on. You were perfectly fit into your story, perfectly fit into the narrative that they push. That narrative isn't entirely wrong, unfortunately. But it's, I don't agree with any of their politics. Do you know who Brett Weinstein is and the whole Evergreen
story? I do, yes.
Yeah. So Brett Weinstein did a very similar thing after what happened to him. He went on these same programs. They really used that against him, the students on campus, saying that he had basically became like an agent of Fox News, and that the people that watched him on Fox News and other programs were inspired by him to be violent, or at least send threats to students and professors at Evergreen College, and that he launched an attack on the most oppressed people on his own campus. Have those arguments been used against you? How have people responded to your going on what I call the anti-social justice warrior tour? I mean, you hit all the notes, I think. And how did you justify that tour?
So I did consult with many people before choosing to appear on those programs you mentioned, like Louder with Crowder, God Sad's Show, Rubin Report. And I'm really glad I went on all their programs. And these incidents might feed the right, as you say, but fundamentally, I don't see freedom of expression or freedom of speech as a partisan issue. And it actually really frustrates me that the left of the political spectrum is just letting the right have free speech as an issue. They're just giving it up, which is, I think, a huge mistake on their part, because free speech is everyone's issue. And it shouldn't even be an issue. It should be like a universally accepted tenet of a democratic society. But now we have people writing opinion editorials who put free speech in scare quotes. I've seen this multiple times. I also spoke at a campus free speech rally in late November, and the on-campus LGBTQ advocacy group organized a counter-protest, and I watched a YouTube interview with those organizers, and they said, "We are here today to protest a free speech rally across the street." And when they said free speech, they used air quotation marks. So it's sad to me that these leftists are facilitating some sort of process where freedom of expression is gaining a negative reputation, when historically free speech has benefited marginalized people like those very trans activists themselves.
The unfortunate thing is that the right really has organized around the banner of free speech in order to bring forward extremely right-wing ideas and even organize racist rallies. I mean, in Berkeley, for instance, there was a free speech, and I'm put quotes around free speech in this case, because it was a free speech rally that actually turned into just a brawl. They came armored and with weapons in hand, you know, blunt instruments, ready for a rumble. And of course, the left-wing radicals in Berkeley gave it to them, and it was just a street brawl. The way that the free speech issue has been used by the right and abandoned, I think you're correct, and abandoned by the left, is very troubling. That having you on my podcast is a way to kind of try to combat that, because I agree with you. I don't think the free speech issue or being a free speech absolutist is in any way an extreme right position to hold. As someone who has unpopular political beliefs, I want to be able to express them and argue my point of view. I don't want someone coming along and saying, "Hey, you can't talk about Marx because that's violence, because look at the history of Stalinism," you know, which could very well happen. Yeah, I'm with you. But the question I still have is, when you decide to go on a program like this one, you're not only talking about the free speech issue, you're also being brought into the program's narrative. You're also being used by the program to create content and to perpetuate a story. If I were to go on to like Dave Rubin or the Rebel, I would definitely want to challenge them on how the right has a lack of real substantial commitment to free speech. And also, you know, I would start spouting out about Marxism and such. You know, so did you, when you were on these programs, try to raise issues that were important to you as a liberal or a leftist?
If
you had your own agenda that was like working against the right-wing agenda of these programs. Because while they do talk about free speech, they also talk about a variety of other issues. Louder with Crowder is extremely anti-socialist. The Rebel, you know, they do kind of embrace the alt-right. Or did in the past. I think they're trying to move away from it now. Dave Rubin is another anti-socialist. Gadsad, it's kind of the same way. you consider yourself to be very sympathetic to socialism. I just wondered if you tried to bring that up on these programs.
No, I just stuck to my story. What's interesting is I'd actually never heard of any of them before this.
Oh, really?
Not Louder with Crowder, not Rubin Report, not God Sad. That's why I had to consult with so many people before going on.
Yeah.
And it all happened so fast. It's not like I have time to do an in-depth analysis of who these people are. And again, I just wanted to talk about what happened to me.
I think that's a fair answer. But these are the questions that if I didn't ask them, I wouldn't be doing my due diligence, because these are things that are going to be on my audience's mind, because we're engaged in ideological battle against the alt-right, or consider ourselves to be. But it makes sense to me that if you hadn't been watching these programs and you didn't really know who they were, and they were the ones who were chasing you down to get your story, that you'd go on. I don't feel that any arguments against you saying, hey, look, she says she's on the left, but look, she's been on these programs, clearly she's on the right, I don't think that holds water. But I do think that what happens is that not only can you go on these programs once, but that if you play your cards right, you can be brought into this industry. You could, like that happened to Brett Weinstein. He's now touring and talking about, mostly about free speech, which is fine. But he's been somewhat embraced by these channels and this whole industry. That's definitely what happened to Jordan Peterson. I mean, all these things already existed before he released his videos, and this little group helped promote him and get him a major platform, because his story was one that worked very well with their narrative. So I just want to tell you, like, watch out if you you don't want to end up participating in something in the guise of free speech that maybe you don't ultimately politically agree with.
Right. And a lot of people tell me that. But then I think, like, this all started from me simply wanting to show a counter argument on a current societal issue. And if we're really in a world where you have to shut down counter arguments, that's so troubling. And it just, that's the kind of thing where you just need a platform to show that this happened, to tell that story, because it's bad.
Right. So what you're kind of saying to me is, look, if the only platform that exists in order to, that will advocate in any way for free speech is on the right, then you will go and use that platform.
Yes. And I've also, even just earlier when we were talking, like I have called for leftists, people who are left leaning on the spectrum to, take back this issue. And even Andrew Scheer, the current leader of the Conservative Party, he brought up my case on the floor of the House of Commons. And the Liberal Party representative, the Minister of Science, she responded, but just gave a vague non-answer, and basically conflated what I did with hate speech.
Wow.
And it's just, why are you giving bad connotations to such an important issue? It's, it's also, I think these leftists need to see what they're doing wrong too.
Oh yeah, I agree. Let's talk about Bill C-16 a little bit. Do you agree with Jordan Peterson's interpretation of that bill?
What's interesting is in the meeting I was in with Professors Rambukana and Pimlott and Adria Joel, one of the things I was accused of was violating Bill C-16.
Yeah.
And so they really were saying that by virtue of bringing up a counterargument, I violated a law. Because otherwise, I mean, I certainly haven't read the bill in full. All I know are the basics that you can't get fired if you're a transgender person, for example, which is, of course, it should be law. But I think when the trouble comes in, and I think Jordan Peterson was right to point it out, if you're getting into territory where it's seen as hate speech or targeting someone's gender identity, to just talk about different views on the subject, then that's really overreaching.
His complaint originally was that if you were unwilling to use the pronoun that a person self-selected, and it could be anything, it could be fae or femme or z, that you would then be committing an act of hate speech by refusing to use that pronoun or even forgetting to use that pronoun. But now it's gone beyond that. Even just to debate the use of those pronouns was considered to be a violation of Bill C-16 by these professors. But it's worthwhile to point out that these professors messed up. I mean, they were wrong to reprimand you. They misinterpreted the situation. And it's very possible that they misinterpreted the law. I think the truth about Bill C-16 might be determined, like, in the courts. Are you more convinced than I am that Bill C-16 really does limit speech?
They were wrong for accusing me of violating it. But if I hadn't secretly recorded this and brought it to the media and had tons of people analyzing what had happened and, you know, even writing articles about whether or not I violated Bill C-16, then how would we have ever known? I mean, if I was someone else, maybe I would have just gone on my whole life thinking, wow, I violated a law. And I also violated a gender violence policy. And I violated the Ontario Human Rights Code. And even one of the trans activists who spoke at a rally in early December, she said, I violated the spirit of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So I don't even know, is this like, are these people personally misinterpreting the law? Or is the law written so dangerously that it's subject to these misinterpretations?
Yeah, it's hard to say. We'll get to the trans activists on campus and what's been going on with them in just a minute. But let me ask one more question about Bill C-16. Do you believe it's possible to remain on the left and oppose Bill C-16?
Yes.
That's good enough. So let's talk about those trans students. I saw a clip of someone talking about your, putting in quotes, free speech, which I rally, which in you say and I believe was legitimately about the issue of free speech. I've also heard that there are acts of violence against trans students now, that they're receiving hate mail and threats, that there might have been actual acts of physical violence against trans students on campus.
Their claims are really troubling to me because they did say in an article that as a result of that free speech rally on November 24th, there's been a spike in transphobic violence. So they're directly connecting it to something that I participated in. And also one of the trans activists, the same one who accused me of violating the spirit of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, told Maclean's magazine that she is subject to transphobic violence every single day. Some days it's harassment and other days it's sexual assault. I mean, these are huge claims. And I really hope, I mean, if you're subjected to sexual assault every other day, that is extremely scary. That just
can't be true. That's just clearly not true, right?
The Rainbow Center's claims of violence, we have to question it because they also saw playing a debate as violence. So they're just trying to redefine the words. And there's been zero complaints filed with the Waterloo Regional Police in regards to transphobic violence. I've seen social media comments, sure. But the thing is a lot of those comments, it's not about them being trans. It's about their position on free speech. And you could be anyone and oppose free speech and be subject to criticism. It doesn't have to be transphobic just because you're trans. I've also been subject to tons of nasty social media comments. The thing is, if you're putting your ideas out there and you're putting your opinions out there, you have to accept that there's going to be some people who don't like it and who will tell you they don't like your ideas.
Right.
And of course, if there is actual physical violence against them and it was done because of me, I totally condemn that. I condemn it in general. I don't believe in violence against people for their identity. But if you're starting to get into territory where you say that debate is violence, then what does that even mean?
I have a friend whose brother created some sort of windshield wiper toy, like you put a witch on your windshield and it looks like the witch is wiping your windows. It went viral online. Like a video he made about it went viral online. And within a couple of days, he was receiving death threats for making a windshield wiper toy. So if you are getting lots of attention online, it seems that you will be attacked and even get death threats, regardless of why you're getting attention. That just is something that happens for people who are internet famous. Have you considered asking the trans activists who are organizing against you to participate in a debate about free speech and trans rights?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely would do that. I think it sounds like a good idea. But, you know, I've been kind of getting more familiar with the rhetoric of these particular trans activists from the Rainbow Center. And I wonder if it would almost be impossible to debate free speech related topics with them. For instance, one of their arguments that they consistently bring up is that debating pronoun usage is debating the very existence of trans people. So, but when people make these kinds of arguments, they set you up in a trap, because how I would respond to that would be to say, well, no, like I completely acknowledge your existence and that you contribute to society. But why do you think that if I show a counterargument to compelled pronoun usage that I'm denying your existence? And then their answer to this kind of statement is usually something along the lines of you have no authority to tell trans people how they feel. Or even like bringing up a counterargument is hate speech and violence. And that's that. Like, how do you argue with those kinds of things?
Well, I mean, I think that if you had a debate, a semi-formal debate, they could say those very things, and that it would be clear that they don't have anything but moral authority to turn to when it comes to addressing counter-argument. The idea that if you don't accept someone's non-binary gender pronoun, that you don't accept that they exist, is absurd on its face, right? Just as an example, no one is quite sure right now whether or not homosexuality is socially constructed or whether or not it's biologically determined. The science isn't totally in on that. The rights of homosexual people shouldn't really be affected or influenced by what scientists or social scientists determine about that question. But the point is that you can debate something very crucial like that, and even claim that homosexuality is on some level or another a choice, without going after anyone's rights, without claiming that homosexuals don't exist. It's just absurd on its face to say you have to accept this particular interpretation of what it means to be trans, or else you deny our whole existence. It's very unfortunate that trans people, so many trans activists, are taking that line, because I think it's self-defeating. What is your view about transgender identity or transsexual identity? Do you hold with the idea that gender is a social construct, or do you have a more biologically determined perspective on gender?
You know, as a disclaimer, there's so much research I would have to do to give like a fully informed opinion. But from what I know so far, maybe it's somewhere in between. Like, you know, there is, sure, it's socially constructed, but also I don't think women are as attracted to engineering, for example, as men are. And I don't think that's all socially constructed, and that's all a result of patriarchy, because that's something that the authoritarian leftists kind of turn to, is everything is systemic and nothing is individual. But well, maybe that's not so relevant, the argument to it.
No, that, I think that's an interesting point to bring up. I was just last night talking about the limits of a Marxist analysis with a co-host or a regular guest on the podcast. On the left, we like to talk about the aggregate or the system or the totality without understanding that there are some things that might be biologically determined or might be just a matter of the character of the individual, and that you have to kind of leave open a space for other interpretations when you talk about the micro level, that not everything fits within one systemic view. So I think you're right, and that's what I'm saying. It very well could be that gender identity or gender roles are systemically produced and systemically determined even, but at the same time, there could be some proclivities that are biologically determined within individuals, but they would vary widely, you know, as well between women. So I don't know the significance of those proclivities if they exist, but it's certainly possible to have a nuanced view on this stuff.
Right. And I think like this is exactly the kind of conversation we need to have, is like to, you know, try to find out to the fullest extent, like to what degree gender is socially constructed or biologically determined, right? But this is the kind of argument that might be construed or misconstrued as targeting or violence on people's identity. It's just important to me in general to be able to discover these, like to think about these issues and talk about them.
Listen, let me just go back to the beginning of, I had a question about people on the left who have been censored, and I just want to point out that they exist, right? And that this is not only a product of left-wing ideology, that in fact the right can be just as censorious as the left, and often are. It's just around different issues. And I also want to point out that someone like Brett Weinstein, when he went on his tour and got on Fox News, his story was used as a justification to support legislation in the U.S. that would limit speech on campus, that would penalize certain kinds of political speech amongst students on campus, that would basically try to suppress the kind of left-wing views that you're encountering on campus. You know, while you might not agree with those views, they have to have the right to protest and they have to have the right to speak. And it's very easy for this to get flipped around. Jordan Peterson also, at one point, was talking about like creating a blacklist of professors and courses that were ideologically poisonous and that needed to be suppressed and, you know, boycotted, which is kind of a gray area. It's not exactly censorious, but it's certainly not doesn't match up with the spirit of free speech that he uses to champion his own cause. So do you recognize that the right can be as censorious as the left?
Yeah, for sure. So just the other day on CBC, there was a pundit who called me a crying white girl. And I wrote about it on my Twitter. I didn't, all I did was point it out. I think it's distasteful, but a lot of people commented and said, like, she should never be invited back to CBC. Get her fired, stuff like that. But like, I don't think that. I disagree with the people who say that. I think she should be able to say that kind of stuff, no matter how distasteful it is. And all I was trying to do was maybe have a discussion about what she said.
What did she mean when she said you're a crying white girl?
There's just been this consistent theme of people attacking me for being white. And because in the meeting I cried, I become a crying white girl.
You're crying because you feel your white privilege has been questioned?
Well, I mean, that's what they think. But obviously, all I cried for was out of frustration because I had just like a different philosophy of education than my bosses did.
What they're doing when they say you're a crying white girl is saying her arguments for free speech are specious and wrong. It's really her whole attachment to free speech is an attachment to the privilege to say offensive and horrible things to people who she thinks are beneath her. And when you challenge her on it, she cries. That's their argument. And that's just an ad hominem attack, ultimately. It's saying she is this person, therefore, whatever her claims are about free speech or any other political issue can be dismissed as a product of her desire, unconscious or conscious, to hold on to white privilege and to perpetuate white supremacy.
And then in regards to, Jordan Peterson's idea of creating that website of neo-Marxist postmodern course content. Maybe it was gone about the wrong way. The thing is, I would like to be able to access course syllabi and to be able to know what's going to be taught. I mean, for example, I'm currently doing my master's degree, and I find there is too heavy of an emphasis on identity politics, and I wish I would have known that before enrolling, because it would have changed my decision to enroll. So I think something like that is needed, but I mean, where I disagree is for the purpose of defunding. I don't believe in defunding humanities and social science programs. I believe in restoring their integrity and strengthening their course content. And then also related to that is, I think I heard Dr. Jordan Peterson talking in an interview recently with Serena Singh, who's a YouTuber who goes by Recovering Social Worker, that he's going to start an online university with its own accreditation system. And so it's kind of, I guess, part of a larger picture, that plan that we were talking about earlier just now. I don't like online classes either. So.
Yeah. It sounds like he was attacking the university for self-interested reasons, not only for political ones. Like, hey, don't go to these courses. Take my online course instead. I mean, at least you could make that claim. I think he probably really hates those neo-Marxists. I mean, I've watched him a lot, and I think he would do the one thing without doing the other. You know, he would write this list of courses that should be defunded without ever creating the online alternative. But I think it's wrong. And I would say that I even question the creation of the list. I don't think that it would be a tactic I would endorse if the left was doing it. Like, for instance, if we were going through and listing all the problematic courses that were being taught in universities and the professors who are pushing an extremely reactionary agenda and targeting them in a one big list. One problem is a lot of things probably would be conflated that don't deserve to be conflated together or listed together. The other problem is that you are, rather than arguing against the positions of your enemies, you're simply kind of creating them as scapegoats or as enemies and treating them as such. So this is an attack that's beyond argument.
So there was an open letter written that was basically saying concerns of diversity and inclusion trump freedom of expression on university campuses. And about 59 faculty members from my university signed it.
Yeah.
These professors who signed this letter were not simultaneously sticking up for me in any way.
Right. Of course not. Why would they? They're not committed to free speech. I think that's completely different to say, here are the professors who signed this petition and their position is wrong and here's why it's wrong. And you should know that this is a list of people who put out their view and this is their view that they just signed. That's completely different than saying, here's a list of the courses that I think are on subjects that shouldn't be studied or shouldn't be studied in this way and that I want to, you know, list together and conflate together in order to attack this whole way of thinking and eliminate it rather through force and rhetoric rather than through argument.
Right. I guess to his credit, like, he did realize the problems with it and that he didn't go about it the right way. But yeah, I mean, I do always just think, like, I wish I would have known what was going to be taught in my courses because that actually would have changed the path I went. So, yeah, it's kind of gray area, I suppose.
When you look ahead to your career in the university, what do you see? Has this changed your direction? I think I asked this before, but it seems like I should ask it again now.
One thing you could take away from the meeting that I had with those three people is that I had to ideologically conform or I would be kind of pushed out. It is going to be dangerous if all the the free-thinking people are pushed out of the academy and, you know, feel alienated and therefore don't want to be involved with it anymore. It'll completely change what universities are about, and maybe it will happen. And I don't know, there's also like the economic situation with universities, and I mean, that's completely changing the situation anyway, is how standards are lowering more international students. It means a change to the curriculum, and it means a change to the standards of what's taught.
I want to ask you one final question just about Jordan Peterson. You've talked to him now. I think you talked to him on Louder with Crowder.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him after that? Have you had any?
Just like brief emails, but that's it.
You find yourself being more sympathetic to him than you were before all this happened?
Yes. And I don't think he's alt-right. And I was just reading an op-ed written by someone in my department at my university who called him extreme alt-right. And without citing that, without linking to another source or anything, just put out that claim. And it really shows that, like, for someone who perhaps has never seen one of Jordan Peterson's videos, yet reads this op-ed that says he's extreme alt-right, I mean, I think that's really dangerous, because I myself have also been called alt-right many times, a hero of the alt-right, in fact, and as well as, you know, the usual other ones like Nazi and white supremacist. And
you know, the thing is, you can become a hero to the alt-right without being on the alt-right. I mean, just the other day, Richard Spencer endorsed Cornel West. None of this makes any sense. And the term alt-right, while I think rightly being associated with white supremacy, catches a lot. And the left makes it worse by just applying it to anyone they don't like. I do think Jordan Peterson is firmly on the conservative right, and I would even say that he's technically a reactionary. I'm going to talk to him, and maybe we'll debate that. I mean, you're entering into a fray, though, that is complicated and kind of ugly. I have this paternal instinct, like, watch your step, Lindsay. Watch your step.
I don't feel co-opted. I don't. I still, and a lot of people, like, you mentioned I did an interview with The Rebel, and the same day, I did an interview with CBC, CTV, Global, but of course, the only thing that matters is that I also happened to talk to The Rebel that day.
Yeah, and the thing about that is you didn't go on their show. That was an on-the-street interview.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, that's not the same thing. It's not like you went and sat with Gavin McGinnis as a guest for 45 minutes and then afterwards, you know, participated in his Proud Boy hazing ritual. You were on the street, and some reporter from a YouTube channel came up and asked to ask you questions, and you said, sure. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really not trying to smear you as alt-right. You know that. I'm just saying, like, it's important to, even though the left doesn't do it very well, it's important to look at the left's arguments that do exist, maybe only historically at this point, and consider the people who are championing free speech is most, you know, free speech most loudly right now, consider their full ideological political perspective and not just this one issue, because I do think that a lot of people on the right, like, for instance, Tucker Carlson at Fox News, is completely opportunistic in his embrace of the free speech issue and is not to be trusted even on that issue, let alone overall.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm lecturing you, so my apologies. Listen, was there anything I didn't ask you that I should have asked you?
No, I don't think so.